We start today with a part of our economy that is as massive as it is opaque. It's the sex industry. And a heads up to listeners that our conversation may include some mature content. The Boston Globe's Diddy Coley has been reporting on the sizable legal sex industry in New England. And for workers in it, there can still be a lot of risk and stigma. And that's getting worse now because digital payment platforms and banks are increasingly pushing them out. Now, the reason for that, increased efforts to protect those who are being hurt by sex trafficking. It is complicated, but it matters, and the implications can stretch beyond, for example, adult models. Diddy Coley joins us here in Studio 2, along with Jessica Van Meer, who is a PhD student at the Harvard Kennedy School and co-founder of a subscription platform for content creators. We're going to dive into this conversation. Diddy, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Jessica, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So, Jessica, I'm going to start with you and a simple question. I just want to quickly break this down for listeners. What is the difference between legal sex work and illegal sex work, basically?
Well, in the United States, the difference between legal sex work and illegal sex work is what's called full service sex work, or what most people call prostitution, is criminalized everywhere in the United States except a few counties in Nevada. But certain types of sex work, like content creation, pornography, stripping, all of those are legal. Now, it's my view that all sex work should be fully decriminalized, but that's the current status of the law in the United States.
Okay, thank you. So now to you, Diddy, because now we're going to spend a couple of minutes on your reporting to set up what we're talking about here. So Diddy Coley, your reporting is about money and legal sex work here in the United States and in New England, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and you went investigating this money angle. What did you find?
So I was coming across a lot of anecdotal reports and research nationally about banks and digital payment platforms. So we're thinking Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, things that are really, you know, in our mainstream culture now, increasingly cracking down on legal sex work, as Jessica just defined. So people who are really working well within the bounds of the law, but now having a hard time existing within the financial system. And I wanted to explore what the ramifications were on a larger scale, because, you know, if you can't get paid, you can't buy houses, you know, you can't open bank accounts. And it really, it snowballs into a big problem for people in this industry.
So let's stay for a second before I go back to Jessica with this. You can't get paid means you can't open bank accounts, you can't buy houses, etc. And as I understand it, this is what you were finding, that as it becomes increasingly difficult to use online payment vendors, bank systems, etc., it becomes increasingly difficult to engage in the monetary transactions that people do when they do work and they get paid for their work.
Exactly. I mean, if you're thinking about people who do content creation and a lot of sex work that exists online, a lot of the times the main way that they're getting paid is through these platforms. That's where the money for their rent comes, their groceries, and of course, any future financial goals, savings accounts, homes, like I mentioned. And so if you can't do any of that, you're immediately at a standstill, and either you need to find another way to make money within the sex industry, or you need to pivot your entire life entirely.
So we're speaking with Diddy Coley, who's a Boston Globe journalist, and Jessica Van Meer, who's a PhD student at Harvard Kennedy School, about this increasing trend we're seeing of people who work legally in the sex industry being forced out of digital banking and banking solutions that give them access to their money and their ability to sort of participate the way people do in business. So Jessica, I'm going to come back to you now. I want to look a little bit of history here. Historically, it's fairly recent that online methods are available, whether you're working in the legal sex industry or illegal sex industry. Having online forms of payment is relatively new, correct?
That's right. Most of our mainstream peer-to-peer payment apps gained popularity around 2013. The kind of first one, though, was PayPal, which started like 90s, early 2000s. And that payment infrastructure on the internet actually was kind of initially formed around the adult industry. And what happens all the time with the adult industry, it's at the forefront of innovation because sex workers and adult workers are always trying to find new solutions when they're shut down somewhere else. So when sex workers were banned pre-internet from advertising in, say, newspapers, they turned to the internet for advertising and they needed ways to accept payments. So our online payment infrastructure was actually built around them. But then once they grew large enough, those companies, they completely shut them out.
So I want to note, there are going to be listeners who are going to say, why is that a bad thing? We're going to come back to that question, this pushback question, in a minute. But there's a little more of this that I want to establish first, because, Diddy, there are two pieces to what Jessica just said that are really interesting. One is that this is the shape of an arc when we go into new digital spaces, that actually the sex industry tends to pioneer new digital spaces, and then as those digital spaces go mainstream, then be pushed out or crowded out. That is something that you found in your reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. And this phenomenon, the advocacy group Hacking Hustling has called it gentrification of the internet. And it's happened again and again. And a lot of the times, the thing that I want to add is these payment platforms had some kind of vague language about, you know, sexual activities in their language going back, let's say, a couple of years. But now the enforcement is what we're really starting to see, a bigger crackdown on some creators. And that's the real problem.
All right. And then the second thing before I go back to Jessica is you also found that around this 2013 time that Jessica is telling us about, when these platforms really emerged and began to change the game, for those who worked in the legal sex industry but were still deeply vulnerable and marginalized, this option of having sort of digital banking and payment platforms created a safer, more secure way to work that was important for people who were working legally in the sex industry. Talk about that.
It's a question of autonomy, as far as I can tell from, you know, some of my conversations with sex workers. You're able to more properly screen your clients. You get to choose how you're paid and how much you're paid, how frequently, you know, that money is coming in, how frequently you're taking it out of some of these digital payment platforms into your normal bank account for your everyday purchases. There's just a level of independence that comes with that, that some earlier opportunities in the sex industry did not provide.
All right. So, Jessica, I'll come back to you now. You said at the top of our conversation, hey, listen, I want to be transparent. I believe all aspects of sex work should be legal in the United States. There are also people who don't and who would believe, in fact, that most aspects of sex work shouldn't be legal in the United States. So for those who would push back and say, what's wrong with crowding people who are engaged in even legal sex work out of this space? Talk about that. Talk about why you would argue, and let's stay in that. Somebody who is working within the bounds of the law now, talk about why it is a bad thing to be pushed out of, crowded out of, being able to participate in things like a PayPal or a Venmo or a, what's that, Zelle or something like that, or not being able to get a bank loan for their small business.
Yeah. So when you restrict people's access to financial services, the payment apps that you and I use day to day to receive money from our family and friends and clients, you make them more economically vulnerable. If someone can't receive payments independently directly from their clients, then they have to rely on a third party to receive payments. So what does that look like? It looks like either maybe they use OnlyFans, which is a platform which allows them to publish content, but takes 20% of their earnings. Many platforms take even up to 50%, which in my view is extortionate. So you're reducing their earnings, which means you're making them poorer. And now if you are a person who believes that people should leave the sex industry and do something else, well, ask yourself, what do people need to be able to leave the sex industry if they want to? They need money. And if you make it harder for them to receive money independently, you make it ultimately harder for them to leave. And in the most extreme situations, now this is not the majority, but in cases where people are so economically vulnerable that they may have to rely on someone else in order to receive payments, like if they can't access a bank account, they may need to get a third party to control their finances. Well, one of the number one ways that sex traffickers control their victims is through controlling their finances. And so if a sex worker cannot keep their own bank account, receive payments on their own, they are ultimately more vulnerable to trafficking, to intimate partner violence, to abuse.
And that, Diddy Coley, coming back to you from the Boston Globe, is the other piece of this puzzle that I want to talk about before we go to a break. That this pushing out of from digital banking spaces came in part because of increasing crackdowns at the federal and local level around sex trafficking. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's legislation that passed in 2018 to stop online sex trafficking. That was also followed by a couple of mandates and lawsuits from major credit card companies that kind of changed how they interact with the adult business. And so this crackdown coming from, you know, PayPal, Venmo, like we've been talking about, is very much in line with a lot of that. But like Jessica said, it's a question of whether or not this is actually impacting the amount of sex trafficking. And if it's, you know, in the end, just hurting people who are actually in the trade legally.
So I want to go back a little bit, though, mm-hmm. and understand. So you have talked about the fact that there were two laws, federal legislation passed in 2018, the Stop mm-hmm. Enabling Sex Traffickers Act and the Fight Online Sex Trafficking mm-hmm. Act. Give us the literally 20-second rundown of what they were trying to do, those two acts.
Well, they were just trying to make it more difficult for people who are interacting with the sex industry online to fall into this path of sex trafficking. And that was by stopping, you know, some... Jessica, do you want to...
We've got 20 seconds. Actually, why don't we actually, since it sounds like, Jessica, you want to give us a little bit more robust understanding of those two acts. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so why don't we take a quick pause? When we come back, we're going to pick up from there, and then we're going to begin to look forward. What this means, what the alternative solutions in the digital space might be, etc. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are having a really interesting conversation here about the challenges on the margins of legal sex work today with the Boston Globe's Diddy Coley and Jessica Van Meer, a PhD student at the Harvard Kennedy School and co-founder of a subscription platform for content creators. It came up after Diddy's reporting in the Boston Globe about digital payment platforms and banks making it increasingly harder for people working in the sex industry to be banked as the push continues to cut access to online platforms for those who suspected to be engaged in sex trafficking. The problem is that it puts people doing legal but risky work in an even riskier situation. We were just about to understand a little bit better the moves at the federal level to push back against sex trafficking. Jessica Van Meer is going to give us just a quick look at that as we then begin to look at, so what happens now? So Jessica, catch us up on that.
Yeah, so the bill we were discussing that was passed in 2018 is called FOSTA SESTA. And this bill was ostensibly intended to end the ability to advertise for sex trafficking online. But what this bill did was make any online website or platform that has advertisements for prostitution liable criminally for sex trafficking. And it did not distinguish between consensual sex work and sex trafficking. And so what happened as a result of that bill is all of these websites that escorts, full-service sex workers used to advertise and find clients have now shut down, which means they have nowhere to go to look for clients, and some sex workers were forced to go back to working on the street. Online sex work, advertising online, can be safer and enable sex workers to screen their clients for safety, and they lost access to those spaces. So as a result of that bill, we've seen a lot of online platforms shutting down sex workers' accounts, pushing them out, closing forums that they used for safety. Unfortunately, a lot of well-intended efforts to combat trafficking in fact put sex workers at greater risk of trafficking.
So you're talking about the difference between legality and illegality and vulnerability and safety, Jessica.
Yes.
All right. So coming back to you, Diddy, now, briefly, you've also found that there are some unlikely sort of fellow partners in this who are saying this creates risk for other types of businesses and industries as well.
So the fight against financial discrimination is not individual to sex work. And in particular, there's two bills in Maine and New Hampshire that focus on conservative businesses, particularly gun shops, who are trying to make it, you know, in state and federal law to not discriminate against these kind of businesses. But sex workers are hoping that it's going to pertain to them as well and help with some of the issues that they've been facing.
All right. So here's the moment we're in now, right? So now we're finding that people who are participating in legal industries are being forced out of online financial exchanges because of concerns about illegal industries. And now new platforms are emerging. Jessica, you have Mint Stars, for example. You're a PhD student at the Harvard Kennedy School. You've done research in this area for a long time. What are you trying to create with this platform, Mint Stars, which is for content creators?
That's right. We created Mint Stars to provide online sex workers an option to receive payments without fear of discrimination. So we use crypto-based payment processors because crypto is a permissionless payment system.
What does that mean?
It means that once you own cryptocurrency, no one can stop you from sending it to anyone else, and no one can stop you from receiving it. It's a way of sending payments with no intermediaries.
Meaning Venmo can actually say to me, I may or may not send my money to person X over there. Crypto,
right.
It's not the same thing.
Exactly. If you have a crypto wallet, no one can shut you down.
Okay.
And so we created a platform that enables sex workers to receive payments from their clients without risk of being shut down. It also means we can charge far lower fees because we're not subject to the high-risk payment processing fees that traditional platforms are subject to.
Now, is there any risk there, Jessica, that it would actually then also be easier for people who did want to exploit people working in the sex industry illegally? That would make it easier to exploit somebody, you know, the vulnerabilities that you've been talking about earlier in this conversation. And if there are those risks, how do you mitigate those?
In our case, no, because we ask for ID from every single content creator. We also have one-on-one calls with every creator on our platform. The industry is highly regulated, and we comply with all of the laws around the industry.
So this has been an interesting piece of this Diddy Coley, Jessica Van Meer. We just heard Jessica Van Meer, who's a PhD student at the Harvard Kennedy School and co-founder of Mint Stars. Diddy Coley, you're at the Boston Globe. You've been reporting on this as we look at this space where, in the interest of trying to shut down sex trafficking, we're watching people who are working legally in the sex industry have online sources shut down for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
We're now in this crypto space, this NFT space, still a confusing space in general, but it's been heavily disrupted in the last year. You know, I think about FXT, for example, and so... FTX, right? Thank you. I still find it confusing, right, Diddy? So how do we put those pieces of this sort of picture together, that seems to be an unstable world in the first place?
I think a lot of workers I talk to see the potential in this technology and are hoping that it can still be a viable platform for them, regardless of, you know, all the chaos around it in terms of, you know, how much it's worth, and particularly with FTX, like you mentioned, and its sudden collapse a couple of months ago. But I think the foundations of what cryptocurrency is could still potentially work for sex workers. But I think a lot of people also have the concern of, like we talked about earlier, the gentrification of the internet. If crypto does become mainstream, is it going to be the same process over again where sex workers have a space for a couple of years and then get kicked off?
So Jessica, is the next thing already emerging? I mean, this gentrification of the internet, one of the things that was fascinating in reading about this is it really does seem that whenever something gets shut down, this is an industry that finds the next thing. So it's way out there, next thing, right, around digital currencies. Is it out there? Is it percolating? Are we going to see this industry bring it forward?
Absolutely. That was the reason that I got into crypto in the first place, because I was seeing so many sex workers accepting crypto payments because they had been shut down on every other financial platform. 35% of adult content creators accept crypto payments, 10% use NFTs. And the beautiful thing about crypto is, by nature of the technology, if you own your crypto wallet, nobody can shut you down. And so I think it provides some level of protection from what we've seen, that all of these new technologies will be built off of sex workers' backs and then shut them out. That said, there are still risks, right? You mentioned the volatility. There's a lot of scams in the space. That's why we use a stable coin called USDC on MintStars, which is worth $1, doesn't change in value, totally backed up by US dollars. But the problem comes when you have to interact with the traditional financial system. So if someone wants to purchase cryptocurrency or they want to sell it for real dollars, that's where there are bottlenecks, and the banks there can discriminate against the adult industry and sex workers and shut down their accounts on crypto exchanges.
So Diddy, we have 10 seconds for this answer. The number one thing you're hearing from banks is X.
Is worry, but I think that goes back a really long time. I don't think that's new.
All right, Diddy Coley is a Boston Globe journalist. Jessica Van Meer is a PhD student at Harvard Kennedy School and co-founder of a subscription platform for content creators called Mint Stars. I've learned a ton today, lots to think about in this space. Diddy, are you going to continue to follow this in your reporting going forward, do you think?
I hope so, yeah.
All right, I want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.